They disable the buy button. They put a big like exclamation point up that says, this is experiencing major issues, and they've taken it down.
Like, if they did that with a pair of sunglasses, it would be because the sunglasses stabbed your eyes out every time you tried to put them on or something
they
like that.
They actually magnified like, the sun into your face.
Hugely problematic.
The Escort Mission.
Roll for host.
Roll for host.
Bang.
Five. Whose is whose there?
That's my 12.
Okay. All right.
All right. Josh, the ever-reluctant host, wins.
Welcome to the Escort Mission Podcast. I'm Josh. Today with me, as usual, we have Chaz.
Hello.
And Mike.
Sup.
And maybe we have a secret special guest.
Let's just...
He
Cut
speaks.
The surprise.
Okay, we have special guest Dave. All right. Welcome, Dave.
Hi, Dave.
Hello, all.
Hey, Dave. Thanks for coming.
How do we know Dave?
Because he's cool.
He just walked in off the street.
That's what I usually do.
Why are you here, Dave?
I enjoy the walk-ins.
Manifestation of the frogs in the creek outside.
Oh, he's the frog king.
Yeah. He's just like a Native American trickster god who's come to join the podcast.
Nice. He's like Loki or something, right?
Right. You guys are giving me some great material.
No, Coyote. Coyote would be the Native American trickster god.
Oh, okay. Here.
Are we picking up the frogs on the mics?
No.
I don't think so.
They're pretty damn loud.
These are very cardioid.
These are
cardioid.
Cardioid frogs?
It's right here, this area. It's not over there.
Okay.
You can't just say it. You have to say what you mean.
The frogs are in a totally different direction than we are. It's all good. Move on.
I'm going to start the show with a meme
of
the week.
Why would you do that?
With a meme
of
the week.
Wait, you haven't even said what show this is.
Yeah, wait, what's happening?
This is the Escort Mission Podcast. Sweet. Welcome. Thanks for listening. Visit us on our website, theescortmission.com. Hit us up via Twitter and Facebook and click on our Amazon link, because when you do that, we get a percentage of anything you buy.
Yes.
And you don't have to pay anything extra. So it's like free money from the air.
Yes.
Or from the Amazon.
All right, now let's get started.
Right.
We talk about, on this show, we talk about, I never do that intro.
Yeah, what are you doing? Just be
Why
yourself.
Am I doing an intro?
Why are you being Chaz?
Why is anyone being Chaz?
All right, I'm starting this show with a meme of the week, motherfuckers. And I don't know if you saw this. This was actually like 2 weeks ago, because we haven't had a show in a while. And it was a Reddit picture post called "We Actually Had to Help Him Down, Idiot," and it was a cat, fat cat that was in like the tree forking branch situation where his feet were like on one branch and his front feet were on another branch.
He's in the Y of the branch.
He's in the Y. That's right. And he's like stretched across it,
like
so
a
that
bridge.
He no longer has any leverage to like jump or climb.
Man.
And he's just hanging out there, and he was stuck, and he's kind of a fat cat.
So you just stared at that and laughed for 7 minutes? What's the over-under on how long you stared at and laughed at that?
I'm thinking like 2 minutes. Tops.
I chuckled at that for a second because the headline's funny. We actually had to help him down, idiot, right? But then the top Reddit comments were, I forgot how to cat.
Yeah.
And number two, 127 meowers. Yeah, those were great.
Good going, Reddit, hive mind, one night stand.
All right, how's your week, Charles?
Oh man, my week was interesting. Actually, it wasn't that interesting.
But the weekend, man.
My week was boring, and so was my weekend.
Just talk.
It's just normal.
No judgment.
Nothing happened. Honest to God, like I didn't do anything.
Awesome.
Sweet.
All right, how was your week, Mike?
So I did stuff. I will fill in for the hollow husk of a life that Chaz is living, apparently. So on Saturday, Friday night and Saturday, I volunteered at Railsbridge, which is a sort of like a workshop to get more women into programming. Because and using Ruby on Rails specifically as the language and framework.
Yeah. I want to know how this went.
So this went rather well. Just a statistic that they have on the front page of Railsbridge is that in the San Francisco area, at least 98% of the people in the Ruby community are male, and 2% are female. So the whole point of this is to change that. So they want to get more women into programming because, in general, not so many chicks pushing the ones and zeros around.
Now, that statistic, I mean, you make it sounds like only for a Ruby on Rails, but that seems to be pretty much general for the entire profession.
Right. Yeah, I'm just saying what they said. You know, they're not speaking for all of programming. They know their area, which is Ruby in San Francisco.
God, I wonder if
the home base.
I wonder how different it is for different languages. That would be fascinating to
learn. It would be.
Yeah, like Python is 4% women or something.
I mean, it's also possible because Rails, which came out in like 2005 or something like that, which was kind of what made Ruby popular as far as a web development server-side language, versus like something like Fortran or COBOL, which has been around for 40 years. I mean, maybe they have a higher percentage of women just because it's been around longer.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I'd say the opposite. Like COBOL...
You think it's like 1% or 0%?
Yeah, like 0.01 or something for COBOL.
Because
the only people who were around learning that in the day were dudes with programming jobs.
Yeah.
Like,
so
I suppose
this came up as a discussion this week, and so I had to read the Wikipedia entry on women in computer science and stuff like that. And apparently, in like 1980, at least one university, women were getting like 45% of all computer science degrees. And in like 2009, women are only getting about 8% of all computer science degrees. So it's like we're making negative progress, potentially. Someone tried to argue the statistics about that with me and say, well, there's just lots more degrees getting given to more men. The numbers for women are still going up, just not as quickly. I think that sounds like bullshit because the percentage has been dropping for years and years. Does 8% sound accurate to you, Dave? We had quite a few female developers when we worked together, but not a large percentage, but several.
Well, even from the sampling size of our workplace, that would still reflect pretty much what Mike just stated, as well as the sampling size of my own college experience. Our computer science department was tiny, and the ratio is about the same. I mean, you know.
The same in terms of what? You think 50-50?
50-50? Are you kidding me? No, more like 8%
I'm asking,
female.
Like, that's what I'm saying. Do you think 8% is accurate?
It's more realistic, yeah, definitely. Yeah,
okay. That kind of bears out my personal experience. Like, my work is half marketing. So, in my department, I am one of four guys in a department of 20. And on the marketing side of the house, women fucking dominate. Like, all women rule marketing.
Yeah, it's no longer the 60s.
It's like, mad women now, right?
C-level executives in my company are women. Many vice presidents are women. Like, it's very serious on that side. On the tech side, it's dude central sausage fest.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Sausage country.
factory, but, you know. Sausage anything works. Really.
Little known Jimmy Dean's the breakfast sausage competitor.
I'm literally going to create an animated GIF called Sausage Country and send it to tech@digitaria.com.
So, yeah, the ratio is really imbalanced. You know, my high school guidance counselor didn't recommend computer science based on trying to get laid. So, yeah, it is what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this Ruby thing... Because Ruby is underrepresented at 2%. It's like, if they could bring it up to 4 or 6
yeah,
or 8%,
right?
That would be a big accomplishment
and
not something to balk
at.
And
I mean,
serious.
So just my background, I mean, I am a programmer. That's how I get paid, but I don't do Ruby on Rails, and I don't have a lot of real-world experience with it. So I was kind of intimidated to even... volunteer, but a friend of a friend was like, hey, I'm doing this thing, you know, do you have any experience doing it? And I said, yeah. So he said, well, you should come volunteer to TA or teach. So I actually ended up teaching the Rails part of my class. There was like maybe 20 to 25 women students, and they broke us up based on experience level, and I was in the advanced Windows side because I actually have some Ruby on Rails experience on Windows. And advanced meaning that they already had programming experience, they just didn't know Ruby on Rails. So most of our class was spent kind of explaining how to do general programming things, but in Ruby on Rails. Whereas, like, my wife also came, and she was a student and a helper Friday night, and she was in one of the more beginner classes, so they spent more time on just Ruby itself and programming. You know, a lot of people who came, or at least a quarter to a third of the people who came had probably never programmed before in their life. So... it was a good mix of people who were experienced and not experienced. And I think it went pretty well, having no other workshop to compare it to at this point. But, you know, getting 25 to 30 women to come out, it was really cool. I mean, my wife, Robin, commented on it that, you know, she actually does tech support and system administration at her job. But she just was really happy to just be around a bunch of women who didn't, who, you know, were on the same level of technical proficiency, or at least wanted to be. You know, she didn't feel like the odd person out. She actually felt like she was with people who understood, and I totally understand that that's an awesome feeling.
Yeah, it was a networking opportunity also.
And it's just like a personal validation. So this kind of dovetails with, while we're on the topic of women sort of in glass ceiling and these kinds of issues, there's a woman called Sheryl Sandberg, who I believe is one of the first female CEOs, or is a female CEO. Just recently wrote a book called Lean In, or it was just recently released and is kind of making noise. And it's one of those moments where it's like there's a lot of controversy for kind of no reason, like both the good and bad controversy, or good and bad stuff that has come out about this book. So in effect, she wrote this book, which is about women in the workplace, how women should kind of approach the workplace, advice for women who, you know, don't typically have the kind of aspects that can make you successful in the modern workplace, which is sort of aggressiveness, assertiveness, a willingness to try and fail, you know, kind of a number of aspects that might be more traditionally associated with men. If this person who wrote this book were male, the book would have received no press whatsoever. And it's one of those weird situations where both the detractors and the proponents of the book are only talking about it because she's female. It's just a weird, it's one of these weird situations where it's like either this is a non-issue or a huge issue, but I don't really know why, and I wish it wasn't. The whole thing feels weird.
I think it's hard sometimes, and the person that Josh was talking about, that he was arguing about the statistics, I think is a lot like us in that we're fairly enlightened, I guess, not to toot our own horns about, like, hey, women are humans too, and they're just as able to do anything that a man can do. But apparently that's still not necessarily the ingrained societal belief. Thus, a book written like that is news when we're thinking, like, right, no, it's just obvious. It's common sense. But the fact that it's news tells me that not everybody necessarily thinks that it should be a non-issue.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, Sheryl Sandberg was advocating, one of the things she advocates are these sort of like lean-in groups, which, similar to RailsBridge, are, you know, she says, get together with women friends, talk through your work issues, attempt to come to, you know, just sort of that same kind of personal validation associations. There's another female CEO who's in the news. Marissa Meyer is the new CEO of Yahoo. And I have never seen more news about the day-to-day decision-making of a CEO.
Oh my God, she's everywhere. Yeah.
She's everywhere. Mm-hmm. And again, I have to think that it's because she's female that, like, every single one of her decisions is getting super scrutinized. Like, recently she announced that she wasn't going to allow telecommuting for Yahoo employees for the foreseeable future, right?
A ton of companies do that.
Yeah, it's lots of companies do it, lots of companies don't.
A ton of companies ban it reduce it when new people take charge.
Absolutely. So it's one of those. So it's a little weird that it's a Silicon Valley kind of tech company that doesn't allow telecommuting. Really a little strange, but there are some legitimate business reasons to, like, she had a couple metrics, like people weren't even, like, many people, maybe even a majority of people who were telecommuting, ostensibly telecommuting, weren't even logging into the VPN on a daily basis. And they were, you know, just like generally unavailable, et cetera. So she had some reasons. She's the CEO. She made a decision. But it's getting, like, reported on in the business press. And it's
crazy.
It's ridiculous. Like, yeah. I'm just like, you have to let her run the company for more than 2 months before you start judging everything. And everything she does is viewed through the lens of her being female.
Well, because she not only has to make decisions, she has to make decisions and, you know, like, as a woman. She can't just make a decision. She's making a decision
as a woman. She's making a woman decision.
Yes. Yeah. You know. Oh, and she probably has to look good, too. So, you know, if she gets her picture taken, you know.
Were you wearing mascara when you made that decision?
Yeah, like that dress you wore when you decided to ban remote working. That didn't work, you know, honey. And it's just, it's ridiculous. So Rails Bridge is good. That was fun. They might do it again in another 3 to 6 months. I think I will probably do it again.
Awesome.
Another, and the show dog has showed up. Hello there. Another thing that I started doing recently is this thing through Coursera, which does online education. They basically let you take courses from, you know, supported big universities. So I'm taking an intro to music production course through Berkeley.
Are they all free?
They're all free. So the thing they do...
It's Mocha?
Yeah, it's MOOC, actually. It's massively open online course, which is basically lots of people. There's approximately 50,000 people in this class, and it's open, I guess meaning free. It's online, obviously, and it's a course. So basically every week, there's a bunch
of lectures. So that acronym is accurate.
Yes, it's an acronym, accurate acronym.
And you potentially get all the learning, but no credits without paying Berkeley money.
Sort of. I guess, yeah. I mean, I just thought it was fun.
It's like auditing a class.
It seems kind of neat. Yeah. Well, yeah, it's like auditing class, except I'm actually doing work. I mean, every week I have stuff I have to do. I just finished doing like my weekly assignment, and I had to peer review other assignments. I mean, I don't think so, but I mean, you do get a grade at the end. I just don't think it. You know, it's not like worth anything. It's just more for your own benefit.
The report card is not sent to your parents.
No. I'm not going to use this to try to get into Harvard or something. But it's really cool, actually. I mean, the website's nice. It's got a huge... There's a big forum. The fact that the instructor does a bunch of video lectures that you watch, and then you take quizzes on it, and then there's a weekly assignment. And he does not grade the assignments. They're all peer-reviewed. So I'm required, as part of the class, to do an assignment and then review at least 4, if not more, other assignments, which is kind of interesting, seeing how other people are doing this. And a lot of them, more than half of them... English is not their native language. So, I mean, I critiqued like somebody from, you know, Serbia, you know, earlier today. And I don't know. I've never really done anything like this. So it's kind of interesting to be a part of.
What are the nature of the assignments? Is it, I mean, it doesn't sound like it's anything written. It's more listening to.
It's like anywhere from like the 3 to a 10 minute video on a specific topic. Like last week was really basic audio stuff like, you know, amplitude and frequency and visualizing audio and signal flow and, you know, using microphones, stuff like that. And then this next week is all about the digital audio workstation, sequencer, stuff like that.
And when you peer review, what are you actually reviewing?
So the first assignment was explain one of the topics yourself in a like 5 minute presentation, any way you want: video, text, presentation, song. Write it on a piece of paper and photograph it and upload it.
So some people recorded themselves on YouTube and posted a 5 minute YouTube.
There was a YouTube video. There was a presentation. There was just a PDF. Yeah,
that's awesome.
It's really as open ended as you can think of, and it's pretty cool. Speaking of music. I got an M-Audio Axiom 25 MIDI controller that I ordered and came way before I thought it was going to come. It wasn't supposed to come at the soonest until Monday, and I got it on Saturday.
For crazy cheap.
For crazy cheap used, like new. Basically looks and functions as good as something that just came out of the box, save like $100. So that's cool.
Awesome.
What is that?
That is a MIDI controller. So you hook it up to the computer and you trigger stuff like you were... you know, you load up like a sampler and you load up a piano and you play it through that. It doesn't actually make noise. It just sends MIDI messages to the computer.
This thing has a keyboard, like a piano keyboard with like, I don't know, 30 keys on it, maybe.
25,
a little sample pad and...
It's got drum pads. It's got like a pitch and a modulation wheel. And it's got knobs that you can turn that you can control various parts of the sequencer. You know, like amplitude, envelope, or panning, or you know.
So I'm actually interested in how music production seems to need these. Theoretically, this could all 100% be digital, right? On a computer, it's a digital tool.
It really is, though. I mean, it's all digital, but there's so much that's going on at any given time when you're working with this that you need some sort of external controller to help you manage it.
Yeah, I don't need that controller to make music. I've made tons of music before I had that thing. Mm-hmm. It's just you have to manually use a mouse or keyboard and essentially program the music. That at least lets me hit record, play something on the piano, listen to it back, and then manually edit the notes rather than doing all of that by hand, which is incredibly tedious.
So, Charles, what's the word that you hate when the iPad makes like a calendar notebook look like a fucking calendar notebook?
Skeuomorphism.
Skeuomorphism, that's the word. Now, I see what you're getting at in the sense that, like, if you were to design a completely digital sequencer from scratch or mixing board or whatever, you could use, like, any kind of dials and knobs and buttons that you wanted. even those words, dials and knobs and buttons, aren't necessarily like the thing you would want. Mm-hmm. You might want like sliding number, like number morphing thing,
right,
that you like interact with somehow, either with your finger on a touchscreen or
and
your
there
mouse,
are definitely
right?
devices like that.
And there are devices like that, but they're just like weird and not traditional generally and not super popular. The knob is actually a really good device.
No, I so here's what I'm
so I'm not a box I wasn't that just actually, is like eight knobs is like pretty awesome.
I wasn't actually getting at anything. I was just sort of make when I said I'm interested that this is the case. I think that it's something there. I don't know if it's particular to music production, but it seems to be like music production, even though it's so digital at this point, seems to really benefit from having these hardware components to it. Right. It's just something fascinating about it.
Well, the other thing is the human touch. I mean, anytime you're working with an art form, you can use computers or digital technology to produce the content, but a lot of times you're going to find that compared to an actual performance by someone there to impose their own touch, their own feel into that through whatever interface that they want to do, you're not going to get that same, the same nuance, the same beauty of it, really. So those things allow live performers to, you know, compose their music ahead of time. And I've seen some crazy controls where it literally looks like a board of an 8x8 grid of just buttons. And each of these buttons controls a piece of a song. But the fact that that's there allows a performer, while they're doing a show, to just, you know, quickly whip up effects, quickly whip up groups of these pieces of the composition together and just start going at it together. I've got a friend, my buddy Rob, he, you know, he's got one of those devices, and he's super crazy about like the possibilities with software like Ableton and the devices that are supported by that, these MIDI controllers, to really, you know, strengthen his own live sound and his music making potential and possibilities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, just using a sequencer, I find actually really detracts from my expressiveness because I'm trying to use a mouse and keyboard to make music, which, I mean, sure, you can, but for me, I mean, I don't play the piano, but having at least 25 keys and a couple knobs and some sliders to map a few things is just, it's just faster and more efficient at doing what I need to do mm-hmm. to make it seem more human, you know, and less like staccato like a machine. Like, that's the thing. I end up making much more machine-like music because it's just easier if you're just on a computer, like, you know, type, you know, programming it in, like making the note, clicking a note, moving that note up here, and, you know, not having any kind of traditional musical instrument to do the input, yeah. like a guitar. I mean, I have a MIDI guitar, too, and I like that as well, just because I know that modality. I know that modality better than the keyboard. So, but it has some shortcomings that I can't get without something like this. So yeah. I'm kind of curious to see how this changes how I make music just having this, because I've never had something that had all the functions this has. So
cool.
I think you'll enjoy it.
Cool. Yeah. One other thing that you guys, you know, I don't know, maybe one of you was going to bring up was this little game came out last week called SimCity. yeah, the actual real SimCity came out, you know, like 20 years ago.
Are we talking about games?
We can talk about games.
Josh, do you need to talk about stuff that's not games?
I do, but, you know, if none of us played SimCity, so it's kind of news.
Well,
not
I
games.
Played SimCity. Okay. I'm the only one who actually
played the demo.
Game. I played the beta.
With
I mean,
the beta. Yeah.
I did not buy it, though, because I basically predicted the kind of crazy first week snafu that's been going on. I just wanted to list for those people who don't know what's going on. So SimCity came out, the new SimCity from developed by Maxis and published by EA. Came out last week, I think, and they've been having lots of trouble. So everybody knew this was going to be server-side. There was going to be DRM. You were going to have to log in.
By everyone, you mean people that follow the gaming blogs, like, in a hardcore
right.
fashion.
And those people are probably not paying money.
Not necessarily, like, 50% of everyone that pre-ordered it.
Well, I don't know. It's just, like, I mean, at this point, in 2013, like, are there really that many people buying $60 games on the day of that haven't done any research about it? Who really does that?
Yes. SimCity is an exceptional game, and the fact that they're calling it SimCity mm-hmm. and not like SimUniverse or SimCity Online or SimWorld or SimCommunity
Urban Planner
Yeah. Like sim community, something that implies its socialness, its onlineness, its MMO-ness. Because it is, we know, like more of an MMO than a traditional single player SimCity.
Right.
Like I know there's a ton of people out there who played old SimCities, don't play a lot of games, heard the new one was coming out and pre-ordered it or whatever. And now they're really disappointed it's online.
Right.
And they're like, what? Why is this game broken? Right. Like an MMO.
So like an MMO, lots of people can't log in. They've actually removed, I don't know if they've brought back by now, but they removed achievements, leaderboards, and even cheetah mode, which is basically the fastest simulation speed that you can have from the game in order to help out with the issues. Amazon, for a time, although it's back up, removed the PC download version from their site, so they were not selling it because of this. EA was actually telling...
Just basically straight up saying, like, that's what Amazon does when a product is fundamentally broken.
Yeah, I mean, that's big. Most MMOs that you can buy online through Amazon do not get taken down.
They disable the buy button, they put a big, like, exclamation point up that says, this is experiencing major issues, and they're taking it down.
Like, if they did that with a pair of sunglasses, it would be because the sunglasses stabbed your eyes out every time you tried to put them on or something
They actually magnify the sun into your face.
Hugely problematic.
Shatter whenever you step outside, just right.
Yeah. They also were telling members of their affiliate program, Linkshare, to stop advertising the game. And finally, as a... you know, token of good affection, they're offering anybody who bought the game, either the disc or the download version, from the EA portfolio to make up for it. And they're sending out the email like in a week to where you can download it. So, yeah, not going so well.
I haven't heard what game, though.
Well, no, it's any game from their portfolio. Well, ostensibly any game from their portfolio. Not
EA,
any
online EA game. EA is doing that or Amazon is?
EA is doing that. Like, they're offering them a free EA game.
Well, that's good of EA.
You know there's going to be limits.
I'm sure there'll be limits. Yeah.
Like you have to be online to play it?
That you probably don't like that much. But anyway, so that's... I mean,
cool. I mean, this had some wide-ranging effects. Like, it caused Tropico to go on crazy sale on Steam.
Which is a good game, by the way. I would recommend that game.
It caused, very interestingly... in sort of the games journalism side of things, it caused Polygon to drop their score twice.
Yes. Oh my god!
From 9.5 I think,
to
or 9.8
It was 9.5 to 8 to 4
Yeah,
that's a little harsh. Yeah, I think a little uncalled for. I mean, I think people get the point out of it was a really poor launch and all that. But
so
it's
are you
still
saying
not
that they
fixed,
should?
Though.
So are you saying that they should not update a score for a game once they have new information?
Like
that...
they waited and it was still broken. And the key part of that score reduction down to 4 was that they removed cheetah mode. And when you remove cheetah mode, like the game is a completely different game.
And that's another thing. This
it's
whole
slow
cheetah
and
mode.
Boring.
So cheetah mode is essentially speeding up the simulation, right?
Mm-hmm. If
why would this have anything to do with the server load at all? This is just basically multiplier.
Well, because it doesn't exist locally. Like
it's in the cloud.
The processing occurs.
And the game mostly is, for the most part, even to this day. You know, whether they get rid of their leaderboards, their achievements, and all that, you still have to connect. You still have to, you know, expend some bandwidth and interact with their servers. This cheetah mode, if you can run the game slow, you can run the game fast without you know, expending extra bandwidth that's going to bog down the servers.
It's not bandwidth. It's like CPU processor time. Like, it does make sense that it literally will, like, if you were just running it locally, if it was a local version, and you watched your CPU cycle, you know, this little percentage of usage, and you had it on normal, it might jump up by 20% if you put it on cheetah. Literally,
in 2013,
that's
though, yeah, it might, but, you know, so, 2013, we have quad-core, we have octa-core, you know, machines, that's not really going to be a problem. The fact that they put it server-side at all is just kind of ridiculous as far as an architectural standpoint.
I tend to agree with
and
you.
And that is
it doesn't make sense that some of this stuff is server-side. I mean, I think the general consensus on the internets is that they put some stuff server-side to have an excuse to make you be connected all the time to prevent piracy.
Exactly.
So that is the accusation for the game, but I'm not ready to jump to that the conclusion, because I think the game sounds like an MMO, that it could not exist, you know, in that form, in this, like, multiplayer, jump into other people's communities and work together with your cities, like, existing and supporting each other and relying on each other's cities simultaneously. Because literally, the cities that you make are smaller than traditionally, and you don't have enough resources or even the size to like build all the large structures. You might only be able to build like a giant ass power plant, and your city is a fucking power plant city, and you need to work with somebody else online who their city is like the dump and another one is like the art district. Mm-hmm. And your people need to flow, your power needs to flow, your water needs to flow, your sewage and trash needs to flow between cities for it to even function. It makes sense for me to it to all need to work in the cloud like an MMO for it to be that kind of game. Mm-hmm. And it's just not the game that they necessarily advertised or that people thought they were buying. Mm-hmm. You know, it might have purely been a naming problem. If they named it Sim Community or Sim City Online, like mm-hmm. maybe they would get way less flack.
So and to go back to your original idea about that, so you think that they specifically named it SimCity to kind of maybe not trick people?
I think it was a mistake.
You just think it was a mistake that they didn't think that through?
I think it was just a mistake.
I think they named it that because they wanted to get people who just saw SimCity. I like SimCity. Not so much to hide or to not hide that it was server-based. You know, they were just trying to get people to play a game that they thought they already knew, regardless of the architecture.
A bunch of other, IPs are relaunching under the same name again, like mm-hmm. Spider-Man reboot, right?
Tomb Raider
reboot, like games, movies, everything. They rename by keeping the original name, by not changing the name,
right?
Even though the product is vastly different. And it works in a lot of instances, and they didn't predict that it wasn't going to work for them because their game was now an MMO, and there's so many people with, like, the Diablo 3 debacle, except, like, multiplied. It was even worse for them. Right. It was, like, worse than they imagined. They might have thought, worst-case scenario, it's kind of like Diablo 3, we get some whiners for a little while, and it's, like, way worse than Diablo 3.
Yeah. Do you think they can come back from this? Do you think it's just a matter of waiting it out and it'll be fine?
I expect the game's going to be fucking great, like, 6 months from now, yeah. I don't know how long it'll take.
But the thing that sucks about that is that it'll be fucking great because a lot of people leave it. Like, there's a spike of usage, and then people leave.
Or because they build more servers?
No, because they can predict accurately. They never fully provision, and all MMOs have this problem, and they do it on purpose, I believe. I don't think that they are unable to predict what the server load is. I think they can predict it pretty accurately. And we've had this conversation on the show before. It's like, don't they know? How can they not be prepared for, you know, this always comes out. It's like, I think that they do know, and it's not worth, there's some ROI calculation where it's not worth provisioning the number of servers that it would require to adequately serve everyone at launch. We would rather have you just wait in a server queue. It's like, this time they extra miscalculated and didn't realize how popular their game was going to be or something, so that they actually had to start stripping features out.
Yes.
So basically they did what every MMO launch did, but they did it really bad.
But their game is too good, or their brand has too much, you know, positive brand equity.
Yeah, who would have thought that SimCity was still that popular? I didn't think it was as popular as it was back in the 3000, 2000.
Well, we haven't had a really good SimCity game since then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pent up demand.
It's probably just a lot of Sims spillover too, because The Sims is still, like, I think, like, the number one PC game.
It's the first game in the genre that I thought looked intriguing in the last 10 years.
Yeah. Since The Sims 1, probably?
Something like that. Like, well, I wouldn't call those the same genre. I played some of The Sims and Sims 2. I don't know, 2.
There's just the scope. It's just a different scope.
Yeah. Anything else this week, Mike?
Just a quick neat thing I just saw online. Philips has this thing called Hue, which are basically Wi-Fi light bulbs. You can buy...
Yeah, they're like $50 each or something.
Well, if you buy the starter kit, which comes with 3 and the bridge, it's $200. But yeah. They just released the iOS SDK. So I was looking at the SDK for how to control lights in your house, change the color, have them wake you up naturally. I don't know. It seems really cool. If I just wanted to throw $200 away to play with, that would be a neat thing to play with. But I don't know. I just thought it was cool.
Home automation is going to be so dope. I can't wait for, like, 12 years from now.
Totally.
When fucking everything is a Nest thermostat.
Like, I want to be in my bed and be able to turn out, like, the living room light from my iPhone.
Yeah. Have you guys heard of the Emotive device?
Uh-uh.
There's a device that's in development that's basically kind of like, you guys remember Empire Strikes Back? There's that one dude who helps out on Bespin. What's
Empire Strikes Back?
Empire Strikes Back.
I don't know what that is.
It's this fantastic movie from... No. Well, there's...
when they're on Bespin, there's like this assistant who's got this weird visor like in the back of his head.
Yeah.
So they've made that a reality. They actually have something right there that basically, you know, picks up on your brain signals and allows you to, you know, use a platform on a software platform to actually control things with it. So similar to your Wi-Fi stuff, imagine not even needing like iOS to control it with your little thing. You just have some
just
weird
thinking
thing
about it.
Yeah, just thinking about it.
Like, I wish the lights were off, and then they were off.
Exactly.
Wait, but are you saying Star Wars isn't real?
You know, it's gone to new people, so okay. Now they're trying to make it a little
more real.
Who
knows what it will become, right? Yeah.
As soon as Disney gets control, anything's possible.
Boba Fett movie, here it comes.
All right, that's all the non-interactive media news.
Dave, how was your week or your last couple weeks? Anything you want to mention?
I'm a game developer. I have no life.
We'll talk about the games you've been working on. Maybe.
Well,
if you want to.
Or not. If they're under
the only
NDA.
Thing I, the only thing I
talk
can
about
say about
it. You had recently.
Did you sign? Did you make yourself sign an NDA?
Yeah. I,
oh, really? Wow, you violated
that
earlier.
To not disclose anything to myself.
Yeah, exactly. And the punishment is I get to beat myself up, you know, when I get out of here. So it's gonna be a rough night. No, there's really not much to say yet about that game except that basically I'm working with an artist. Up in Burbank, Ian Hamilton, who's you know, on the verge of launching his own webcomic called Cactus Patch about a armadillo and his best friend, his Costello to the Abbot, rattlesnake named Shakes. So I'm working on a project to kind of working on a project just to make that a help bring awareness to people through the medium of video games.
Cool.
Nice. Yeah. I've played this alpha, if it's an alpha.
We've all played it.
Pre-alpha.
And yeah, I think pre-alpha. It's got potential. I'm excited.
Yeah.
Also, speaking of webcomics, this is another news item. Penny Arcade Strip Search
has
launched since we started to...
New episode tomorrow.
It's pretty fun. It's kind of like the dumb reality show. It's like, I'm not sure it's any better, except we know those guys.
Yeah.
And we like them.
I actually think the host is pretty bad.
Yeah, the host
is
not good.
He's kind of bad.
The host guy is not great.
He's like got
but all
no
the contestants
personality
are great.
At all.
I love the contestants.
Here's the thing. People
I'm in love
think
with them.
That hosting a reality show is fucking bullshit and easy.
I think it's hard.
And like, if you ever really think about what Ryan Seacrest does, we think of Seacrest as like this kind of talentless, hacky guy. It's fucking hard to keep that shit rolling and like get all that stuff going on and make it smooth and, you know, be engaging.
Yeah, the show's pretty awkward.
Yeah.
It's got uncomfortable pauses and it's almost intentional, maybe. I mean, it just feels
it's like it's made by a bunch of geeks.
It's made by geeks because it is. And even like just the dialogue between the contestants that they chose, who are all like aspiring webcomic artists or existing webcomic artists. There's no conflict. They didn't choose them based
not
on their personality.
Not yet.
Right? They didn't choose like people who are like super angry.
Yeah.
Et cetera. Like they're all just really nice and hey, what's up? Hey, nice to meet you. That's like the whole first episode.
Oh my God, I'm glad that you're here. You're someone who I actually like and respect.
But I'm okay with that because that means I actually like all the contestants.
It
so
is
far.
Weird. I all like that, it in a meta way.
Like they are nice people I would want to hang out with, I think. Unlike most reality show people who are all hamming it up.
Chosen for conflict.
Yeah.
And that being said, I do actually like the show quite a bit. I think it's fun and I'm excited to see where it goes.
I like that it's free and easily watchable on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's always
that's the best part,
right?
Do you know if during the course of this series they're going to try and I guess up the conflict ante, like possibly drawing poop on each other's?
Well, they just started. Like they just started by spoiler for like the second or third episode. The first person who won something had to select the other people to eliminate. Mm. So that's a pretty tough decision that should lead to some
bad blood.
Yeah, you're doubly hated at that point because not only did you win and we hate you, but you eliminated someone who I probably like.
And I do not think she picked like obvious like worst people there.
Right.
Like she picked some serious contenders potentially.
And that is what you ought to do, right? From a game theory perspective, you should eliminate your
potentially
competition.
And the shirt that she designed is online. I already saw it.
Yep, you
that's
can buy
pretty
it.
Cool.
All right, I'll go through a list of stuff that I want to bring up. I have to mention that a new Android podcast app Well, it's not really new. It's been out for a while, but it like updated with, and it's virtually new. It's called Pocket Cast, and it's phenomenal.
Oh.
It is the best podcast app on Android easily by far. It costs around $3 or something like that. Totally worth it. It's really, really simple, but it has all the basic settings that I want that none of the other crazy, complicated, and $7 podcast apps have. It's so good. The only thing it's missing is a night mode, and I emailed the developer, and he's like, oh, don't worry, we're working on a night mode. It'll be out shortly.
What's a night
mode? Yeah, what's a night mode? Like going to sleep with it or something?
Theme, like
oh,
dark.
Oh, I see.
Like it's really white. When it's in your car, it's like, fuck, there's a big white light in the middle of my dashboard.
I hate things that are white.
I know, I need to flip it to night people. Theme.
Once you go night theme, you never go back.
Yeah, why doesn't everything default night theme that's on a phone that you're going to have on your car?
Do you use Blackle all the time?
What?
Do you use Blackle?
I don't know that.
It's Google, but black.
Really?
Yeah.
Blackle.com?
Yes.
That's good.
It was actually literally put out as a power-saving page.
For plasma screens and stuff.
And for CRTs.
Nice.
Like, if all CRTs in the world were using Blackle instead of Google, the world would save, like, X amount of huge amounts of power. Not relevant for LCDs, so not really that relevant anymore, but even nice. So.
Love it.
It's like, yeah.
Put that in the show notes, Blackle.com.
I listened to some music this week, this album by this band called This Town Needs Guns. I don't know if you've heard of these people. Album is called 13.0.0.0.0. And they are like...
Like a version number or something?
They are like a Death Cab Cutie style, for Cutie style version of Tool. Like,
huh. What?
Like they sound chill. And like a singer-songwriter indie pop band or whatever, except their beats and drums and guitars are fucking rad like Tool. Like the meter changes like every measure. It's like 5 and 7 and blah, blah, blah. It's really, really interesting version of a band that kind of at a superficial glance sounds like Death Cab for Cutie.
Huh.
So they're really cool. Highly recommend them. This Town That's Needs awesome. Guns.
Is 13.0.0.0?
Point zero.
Oh, there's, so it's not an IP, it's not an IP address.
It just sounds like a version.
Right.
Number.
I think there's 4 zeros. Right.
All right.
Also, Square Pusher put out an EP or a half EP called Enstrobia. Just a few tracks. It's pretty cool. Let's see. Humble Bundle Android Bundle 5 came out, and it's just stock full with ridiculous games. Super Hexagon. Night Sky, like an HD Android port that is apparently phenomenal. Solar 2, which is a really good game. Dungeon Defenders, which we all played a ton, but comes with like all the DLC and like a couple other games I hadn't heard of.
Nice.
So another just ridiculous obvious buy. I think I've bought every Humble Bundle that's ever come out because there's never any reason not to.
And have you tried Dungeon Defenders on Android?
I tried it on a phone a while ago when I had a slow phone.
How's it work?
It was really painful.
Okay.
That but it sounds like not worth it.
But on a new fast tablet, it might be worth it.
Yeah.
What are the is it on-screen controls?
Yeah, but on the phone it was just too small. You couldn't be accurate enough with exactly where you wanted to place a tower.
Uh-huh.
Stuff like that. But on a tablet, like it might be totally functional. I kind of want to retry it now on my tablet.
Is that on iOS or just Android tablets?
Good question. I don't know. It's definitely on Android for a long time. Strip search. There you go. That's okay. Stuff.
I have stuff.
Want to do media or
no,
are you
no,
still
I
on
stuff?
Stuff?
What stuff. The fuck is with our Congress? Fucking sequester.
Oh my god.
What is the deal? So I was.
It's
Josh
like they
I,
like creating time bombs that will definitely explode.
No, that's fine. That was like an idea that totally makes sense. Let's make something that's so shitty that we'll never possibly let it to happen. Oh, wait, we're fucking imbeciles, and it happened.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like,
God, it's depressing.
All right, let's pretend I was living in a cave for the past year. What is the sequester, and what's going on with Congress?
So Congress has been...
They're fucked, Dave. There.
Congress has been in this situation of neither party having a supermajority for quite a while. So they've been kind of in a deadlock where they can't agree on any major shit. So they've just been like postponing major shit decisions.
And for a number of reasons, such as like district gerrymandering and just the ease that with which one can filibuster in the Senate, it's really hard to structurally hard to change any of those things.
And everyone's getting more polarized. Like, no one is any longer like moderate in Congress. They're all just super right wing or super left wing, and so they just don't get along and they can't get anything accomplished. So we have a budget crisis, obviously, for a while, and we need to make some cuts and maybe some increase some revenue, right?
Right.
President got elected on a plan of like balancing some revenue increases and some budget cuts.
Closing loopholes, raising taxes, cutting the budget.
Right? And Congress couldn't agree on a budget. And so they were like, well, let's give ourselves this arbitrary deadline where if we don't agree on a budget by this date, then we just slash all programs by a lot. By like the DOD, like education, like everything by just like 15% across the board or something crazy. Like, I don't know the exact numbers, right? And if that happens, obviously a ton of people are losing their jobs, like a ton of departments are like just like, it's going to be bad news, right? So then they did not meet that deadline. So they pushed, but they did like agree enough to push the deadline back. And so then
The Onion had a great article parodying
right,
recently.
But then they had the deadline again, and this time like it was like, okay, it really has to happen this time.
No, for reals, yo.
And then
they don't take backsies.
Then they couldn't agree again, and then they let it happen. So now essentially for the last week or 2 weeks, 1 week I think.
Yeah.
We've been in this mode where now we kind of really have to implement crazy 15% across the board cuts that no one wants to implement.
You guys are being really hard on our government. I mean, clearly they're able to agree on pushing things back further.
Well, they weren't this time, which is the problem. They needed to push it back again, and they didn't.
So Josh and I hung out over the weekend, and I was mentioning that House of Cards is a really good show, but the fact that it depicts a Washington where things happen and bills get passed is the most unrealistic thing about it, and actually takes me out of the show slightly. Like, watching that, I'm like, this is unrealistic. Like, no bill could ever possibly pass our fucking incompetent.
So that series should have ended with Frank Underwood just kind of like frustrated with his face in his hands, like, why doesn't anyone just decide?
Yeah, just like, it should just be a show where they just like bullshit about things and are only in Washington for 3 days a week and then fly home to raise money. Like,
I know he's like in Washington 24/7, like busy, and he can't find like one day to go to his hometown.
Right. It's like, it didn't make any sense at all. You're there 4 days a week. They're literally Congress is in session Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Then they fly out Friday. They fundraise all weekend. They come back Monday. They fly back Monday.
It would be a boring show, though, if it were like 80% fundraising.
More realistic, but far less dramatic. So, yeah, that's annoying. I finished The Mirage, which is that book that I mentioned last week, Matt Ruff. That book is really fun. Very good. Like I said, not cheesy at all. Seemed like it would be cheesy. Very, very good. Well thought out. And has a cool, you know, fun kind of like twist-ish ending. I started another book that also happens to be about, read two books in a row that are Western authors about Arabia and Islam. This one is called Alif the Unseen, with the author is G. Willow Wilson, and it's about a hacker in sort of modern day, like Gulf oil, Arab state, kind of dealing with censorship and whatever. And it also has some like kind of fun supernatural aspects.
Awesome.
So that's cool. Groovy. Yeah, that's what I did.
That sounds cool. All right, media. Mike?
So you already mentioned Strip Search. I actually watched two movies in the past 2 weeks. That's big for me. One of them was Safety Not Guaranteed, because both Josh and Justin said that was great.
It's a really good one.
They're right. It was a good movie. Totally... I don't want to say too much.
Don't say anything.
It's not exactly what you think it is based on the previews, so you should go see it.
I saw a movie. I forgot about the movie I saw. Okay, go ahead.
And yeah, just one other. I don't know if one of you guys mentioned this one, but for some reason it was on my Netflix queue and I finally got around to watching it, which was Last Dance, which was this documentary about a collaboration between the modern dance troupe Palabolas and children's author Maurice Sendak. the author of Where the Wild Things Are.
I heard about. Oh. I think you heard about it on Colbert or something when Maurice Sendak.
When he was on the show, yeah. So Maurice Sendak, he's a really interesting guy. You know, beloved children's author, but also just kind of
the late Maurice Sendak.
Right, the late Maurice Sendak. So he did a project where it was basically about the Holocaust. At least that was the setting for it, with this modern dance troupe called Palabolas. So it was a modern dance Holocaust thing, project that they did. And you
Palabolas
know,
are the group who do the shadow dances, right?
I have no idea. I didn't really look into them. Maybe. That sounds like something they might do.
I thought their thing was that they projected shadows of themselves against...
They did not do that in this one, so I don't know. Maybe they
Maybe I'm thinking somebody else.
I mean, it was interesting. I mean, it was billed as a sometimes contentious relationship between them. But honestly, most of the documentary was pretty congenial. Like, you know, I mean, maybe they didn't always like all of his ideas, or, you know, he pushed for nudity in it, which was kind of controversial, and some people were not happy with that, but he felt it was right for the theme, the serious theme of it. And, you know, they showed maybe about, like, 10 minutes of the final show, you know, they put it on one night and they filmed some of it. You know, I'm not super into modern dance, but, you know, you have to give them props because some of the things they do are really, like, you know, they're almost Cirque du Soleil level, except not acrobatics, instead just dancing, you know, the kind of the positions they contort themselves into and, you know, hold it, like, some guy's, like, bending all the way backward and some woman is, like, standing, like, on his chest, you know, and he's just, and then he also, I don't know, you know, lots of, like, strength and flexibility. So it was really cool.
Neat. Yeah. That sounds really interesting. I love Maurice Sendak.
Yeah.
Yeah, Charlie just, like, within the last, you know, 3 weeks got into Where the Wild Things Are. Like, the classic Maurice Sendak. We've had it in his room for a long time, and he finally, like, went over to the bookshelf and, like, let's read this book. And we read it, and it's like, now he wants to read it every night.
Nice.
Like, yeah, the one really cool thing is he designed the... set, like, behind them on the stage. I mean, there weren't a lot of props. There was, like, a bench or something, and they had cool costumes, but he envisioned this whole very Where the Wild Things Are style art, like, scenery that was really cool.
Did you see that movie? Did anybody see that movie?
I saw that movie.
Oh, what no, movie? I did not
the,
see
the
it.
Where the Wild Things Are movie.
Oh, no, I did.
It made a couple years ago.
No.
Spike Jonze directed.
Okay. Yeah. It looked cool. I wanted to see it. I'll watch it.
Yeah, I haven't. All I heard at the time was that they, you know... You know, the book is like 60 words long or something like that, right? So that they kind of interpreted and came up with a whole, like, interior life to the story that wasn't part of the book, like imagined extra bits of it. Mm-hmm. You know,
this seems like that would be necessary
framing device of the rest of the family who don't actually appear in the book. They just they're just voices that Max speaks to. Yeah. Anyway,
Dave, any relevant, interesting media you want to mention recently?
Interesting media. Well, I just saw that Wizard of Oz movie.
Great and Powerful Oz?
Yeah.
James Franco.
Yeah, I haven't seen any previews or anything. I just decided I wanted to go see a movie.
Best way to do it, man.
Yeah, and so I was pleasantly surprised. I enjoyed it. And, you know, I saw it in 3D, which is kind of awkward since I wear glasses, but it was pretty good.
Have you seen many 3D movies?
Yes.
Is it always awkward for you to wear glasses? Because I wear glasses too, and it's not,
it just feels weird. Because I mean, you know, my nose is not the largest in the world.
It's not on the bridge of your nose. Right. It's like
It's not super comfortable. Sure. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So, but other than that, I mean, I enjoy them for what they are.
Yeah, that movie looks interesting.
It looks visually. Some people like it. And really, some people
it's
hate
pretty
it,
spectacular but... in the visual department.
Yeah.
I don't get the kind of hate for 3D. There's a lot of anti-3D. I think it's, like, quite fashionable to be like, I don't see shit in 3D. I only see 2D. Or, like, I hate it. Or, like, why are they doing it? Well, and I think that it frequently adds a cool dimension. Like, I think Avatar is, clearly better in 3D than in 2D.
Certain movies pull it off much better. Yeah, Avatar's great.
When the movie is made with 3D in mind, like, from the ground up,
yes.
I think most people are mad when it seems to get grafted on, like, a gimmick to a movie that didn't really need it or wasn't made with 3D in mind.
I would agree
with
that.
That happens a lot.
But I do know several people who are like, 3D is never good. It's always better to see 2D.
Yeah,
well, that's
bullshit. Yeah, I have friends like that, too. I mean, and the funny thing is, when I ask them about it, it's like, well, which 3D movies have you seen? Like, no, I don't even watch them. Like, they don't even attempt to, you know, try and experience it. So that's too bad for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen a few in the theater, like Avatar and whatever, and they sometimes they're really, really cool, and they add a lot, I think. Maybe they're not worth $10 more or whatever for the ticket. Mm-hmm. But I have to mention on that topic and move on a little bit, because for the first time, I experienced 3D on someone's personal TV in their home.
Ooh.
This week. I went to a friend's house who just bought a 55-inch, like $1,500-ish, nice, either Samsung or Panasonic plasma with really good blacks and like gets really bright 3D, like just an awesome TV. And we're sitting relatively close on a couch or whatever. And then he just got 4 pairs of glasses in a pack. So we all got to use the glasses with PS3 and bring over everything we had that was 3D and try it all in his PlayStation. We finally figured it out, because apparently you have to have the PlayStation on when you turn the TV on for the TV to detect that it has a 3D input signal or whatever. It's weird. Or maybe it's the opposite. It's the opposite. You have to have the TV on when you turn the PlayStation on, so you have to reboot the PlayStation if your TV's already on. Mm-hmm. Anyway, then when you launch the right games, it prompts you if you want it in 3D. So we tried Super Stardust.
Mm-hmm.
Super Stardust is pretty cool in 3D.
I would think so.
It's like bright ass colors, and it looks weird. It's cool.
Is that the you're flying around the planet shooter thing?
Yeah, like it's around Geometry Wars on a 3D.
Yeah,
plane.
That would seem to be a good choice.
Super cool, but you couldn't like tilt the controller to change camera like the Vita version. So I immediately went, "This is inferior to the Vita version. Fuck this." Then we tried Wipeout. Wipeout was like, holy Jesus, that is some deep ass 3D, because you're like flying
not just the tip
through tunnels, you know? That looked really cool. Okay, then we watched a little Prometheus. Now, Prometheus is a dark movie. Even on, like, you know, my TV with the brightness up, like, I was still like, geez, this is kind of dark on a regular Blu-ray or whatever. But the 3D version of Prometheus with those glasses is so goddamn dark. Even with all the settings recommend, he, like, literally Googled for best settings for his TV.
Yeah.
And he, like, spent 15 minutes entering
programming
it. Yeah, programming. And then we turned out the lights in the room till it was, like, pitch black in the room. And it was still goddamn dark. It's like wearing sunglasses. It was way darker than going to a theater with the inactive glasses.
Right.
These are the active glasses where every eye turns off one eye.
It literally blacks
half the time.
Out. Mm-hmm. Blacks out the light.
So the math might be something like 50% darker or something, because your eye is only seeing half the time. And it just looks crazy dark. Like it was.
So not worth it.
It was detracting enough that it was annoying. Now the 3D,
it just makes it hard to see.
Yeah, the 3D looked kind of cool, but it definitely made me hesitant about buying one if a lot of the sources end up being that much darker. I thought it was only a little darker, like the theater, but it's quite different, and it was a lot darker.
Does the 3DS play movies yet at all?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so.
I was wondering how that tech would actually work with, versus something like the whole shutter system on the glasses.
It's not darker. The 3DS uses like a holographic thing on the front or whatever you call it. It's totally different.
The 3DS's glassesless 3D works basically because they can ensure that you are going to be a certain distance away from the screen.
And there's one viewer.
Right.
And there's only one person who needs to perceive the 3D, right?
If you try to replicate that at TV distance with multiple viewers, it gets really complicated.
Sure. But even just like on the handheld, because a lot of people, like, let's face it, a lot of people these days watch movies on tiny, tiny devices.
Yeah, they could release movies on there, but it's not really the right aspect ratio either. It would have huge black bars.
Oh. Yeah.
So it was not meant to be a movie watching device.
Yeah. Yeah, if Sony made it, they would totally put movies on that thing. They try to sell movies on the Vita. So.
Sony, Nintendo... You know.
Netflix works pretty decently on the Vita, I have to say. It looks good.
As it should. Like, yeah.
Like a phone, kind of. One more thing we tried. Uncharted 3. We tried Uncharted 3 in 3D. God damn it. We turned the gamma, like, way the fuck up in that game in addition to everything else, and it was still crazy dark.
Wow.
Also, except the bright parts were, like shockingly white because we turned the gamma up so high, and we still couldn't see the detail in the darker areas of the game. It was totally a problem if you were going to play the game with it on. It looked kind of cool for some scenes, but it was totally not worth it in that game. So it's kind of hit or miss for the different games. That's the gist.
Yeah, so interestingly, on the darkness thing, in actual theaters, I know like major cinephile types at my work who actually know the specific theaters and the specific, like, theaters within the larger theaters. So like Theater 4 at UA Horton Plaza or whatever, where the theaters play movies at the actual brightness that they're supposed to. And apparently what these people say is that many theaters will play, will run their projectors at well below their recommended brightness settings in order to save extend life on the bulbs. Yeah, extend the life of the bulbs. And that when they do that on a 3D movie, it gets ultra super dark, and that's a particular darkness problem. That basically, if you run those, you know, a 3D movie, the recommended brightness setting is a little bit higher than the normal recommended, and then everything can look just fine. But it means the bulb
decreases
burn out faster.
The life of your bulb by a couple months or something.
Yeah, and so it's like that. You know, each of the bulbs for one of those, you know, huge movie theater projectors is whatever, you know, $6,000 or something.
They're
like
a lot,
that.
Yeah.
So yeah.
You gotta tell me which theaters. You gotta get the hookup.
I'll find out which ones they are. Yeah. Because apparently, like, people who are in the know are they know. It's like, go to see this movie. Are you seeing that one? Well, you have to see it at this theater, at this theater.
Nice. Yeah, give me the hookup.
So I did see a movie. I saw Silver Linings Playbook.
Nice.
All right.
That was good.
Yeah.
Very good, actually.
It looks really good.
Yeah.
It is good. I mean, Jennifer Lawrence won Best Actress.
Yeah. Justin recommended it. Robert De Niro's kind of doing his Robert De Niro thing. He's like, I'm Robert De Niro. Fuck everybody else. I'm pretty awesome.
I think he did a little more, better than that. But yeah,
it was hard for him
not to be Robert De Niro.
The best thing that I've seen him in like 10 years. But yeah,
and how about
good.
Chris Tucker? Like, even though it was a very small part, like, holy shit, Chris Tucker.
Chris Tucker's amazing in character roles.
Yeah.
He's fucking amazing. Like, Ruby Rod is one of the greatest characters ever put on film.
That was what
he was
born to do.
Yeah.
So if he ever does something...
Really interesting, quick little character roles. Those cuts, he's awesome.
And not just hang out with Jackie Chan for a whole movie.
When he tries to carry a whole movie, no, thank you. Yeah.
All right, everybody's done with media. I'll go through a list real fast. All right, ready? Five big lists of movies. Mostly Netflix discs. I've been doing the Netflix discs, getting through as many as I can into my free 1 month. I think I'm going to get to over 20 in 1 month.
Jesus
Christ. All right, ready?
Yeah.
27 hours.
Oh, yeah.
Ultimate 5 stars. Hack. Like, if I could give it more than 5, I would. That movie was so intense.
Oh, wait. That's not the hack.
It is
the hack.
It is.
Oh, okay. All right.
127 hours. You said 27
You did say 27
hours.
Did I say it wrong?
Yes. It was way longer than a day.
I deleted
and 3 hours.
A digit by accident.
That wouldn't be interesting. A day?
It would be interesting if somebody cut their arm off after 27 hours.
Like,
that would be a very different movie.
Dude, arm off.
My shoelace got stuck under this rock. I'm going to chop my ankle off. That movie was fucking phenomenal. Really good editing, really good music, really good music. Really intense and awesome the whole time. Another one, Black Swan, ultimate 5 stars. So good.
Yeah, I know why you're giving that 5 stars.
So good.
I've seen that on the internet.
No, that movie is really good. Like, I knew the basic, like, meme stuff about it, but it's just a phenomenal movie. I didn't expect it to be that good. It's really,
really?
Intense.
But isn't
it's
it
really...
Aronofsky?
Yeah, he's great.
His stuff is pretty good.
Yeah.
Have you not seen it yet?
Aronofsky.
Oh. I've only seen...
You need to see it,
I think,
because it's fucking rad.
Yeah, do yourself a favor and check out Black Swan.
Okay.
Seriously, it's not a girly movie.
Yeah, you put an exclamation mark by your notes, so that's a new ranking. You haven't used that before.
It's like an emphatic 5 stars.
It's like 6 stars, if you could.
All right.
It's not just 5 stars, it's 5 stars.
That's right. Yeah.
5 stars.
All right.
Fucking 5.
All right, regular 5 stars. Never Let Me Go. This is like a romantic drama that's kind of like... a sci-fi, but it's more like it's almost a historical fiction about medical advances in the 60s that where they raise clones of people and then harvest their organs when they're 20 something, and then they can extend the life of other people like by a lot.
So it's Logan's Run.
It's a lot of Logan's Run-y, but it's a romantic drama in that setting with Andrew Garfield and Keira Knightley and some other folks. And it's actually just really, really good. It's touching. Hugo.
Touching your organs.
Hugo, 5 stars. It's gorgeous, and it's a family movie, but it was super engaging. It was just riveting. If you haven't seen Hugo, it's on Netflix streaming.
It's fantastic. You know, strangely enough, I tried watching on Netflix streaming, but every time I do, and it's the only movie that does, is it'll like get to maybe 2 minutes into it, and then just... it'll lock my Xbox.
No way.
Yeah.
I watched it on my Xbox. It didn't happen.
You don't have a PC, or you watch it on your phone or something? I mean, that's probably not a good.
Well, I've seen it before. So
Can you skip forward for like 1 minute? Miss 1 minute of the movie?
I'm not sure. I think I gave up by that point because it was frustrating to have the entire device die. So yeah,
that sucks. It is the kind of movie that's worth like renting in Blu-ray or something.
I've already seen it, so it's not a huge deal.
Looks great,
but I was kind of curious to see if anyone else had that.
No issue. Sorry, I had an issue with Hulu last night on the Xbox, but anyway. All right, four stars. The Master. This is the
Scientology.
Not quite. It's the like hinting at Scientology. It's not actually a Scientology.
It's not specifically
Scientology. But it is about L. Ron Hubbard, right?
No.
No. It's like about a guy who is kind of like...
Okay.
I wish it were more...
So that they wouldn't get sued?
Yeah.
Essentially?
I wish it were more directly about Scientology. That was kind of my problem with it. I wanted to like it even more. Hmm. It was Philip Seymour Hoffman and Joaquin Phoenix.
Joaquin.
There is a book that's out right now that is very specifically about Scientology.
That'd be really interesting.
It's called Going Clear.
I want to read that shit.
It's called Going Clear. Yeah. I don't recall the name of the author. I'll link it in the show notes, but it's... I heard an interview with him. It was riveting.
I mean, the movie's good. Joaquin is like a drunk, and then he finds the cult, essentially. And I couldn't get crazy invested because I wanted him to be a real person, and I wanted to know more about real Scientology. That was kind of my problem with it.
Yeah.
But it was very good. Four stars. Children of Men.
Yes.
This was like kind of an amazing movie.
Yes.
But I only gave it four stars because I just couldn't get super invested in it. I don't know why. I think it had to do with like the editing or the cinematography or the setting. Something about the beginning, because as good as I could tell the movie was in like a lot of these concrete or objective measures, you're like, oh, this is a well-made movie, right? I just was not invested in the characters even halfway through. I was just like, I don't know. Yeah, this stuff is happening, but I'm not like super involved. Maybe it's a music problem, you know? I didn't think about it. On second watching, I would try to pay way attention to the soundtrack and like the cinematography because I just was not involved in it. I was watching it. Somebody gets shot and I'm like, oh, okay, that person got shot. I wasn't like, oh, Jesus! Like I should have been.
What's that one about again?
That's a futuristic movie where people can't breed anymore.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah. Right.
That's the kind of post-apocalypse where no one's having babies.
Yeah, isn't that... That's one of those movies that now kind of gets studied by film buffs because of the techniques they use. Like, there's a really long take that's like 5 minutes long or something.
Particularly known for its cinematography and editing.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that take is amazing.
So you liked it technically,
there's a lot of technically amazing
emotionally
things.
Invest in it. Okay.
Exactly. There was something about the art direction or the music or something.
Yeah. Okay.
Very bleak. I mean, it's a bleak fucking
really
movie.
Really bleak, yeah. But I can get into bleak if the music's right or something. Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to blame it all on the music.
Oh, wow. I don't think anybody has blamed the music in that movie.
I'd need to watch it again to be sure, so I can't stick to that. Bernie, four stars. Jack Black in like a serious, based on a real life drama, kind of a dark comedy, but really mostly drama, about this guy, whatever. Anyway, it's a good movie. Safe House, Denzel Washington.
No one is safe, no one is house.
Denzel Washington and Ryan Reynolds in like an action movie, action thriller. And it's kind of like a low-rent Bourne movie, but really good. Totally fun. Four stars. Safe House. Friends with Kids.
I've seen that.
This is Apatow. Mm-hmm. A bunch of couples. All kinds of people.
Yeah.
Is this the one with Adam Sandler?
No.
It's the one with the guy from Parks and Rec.
And the guy from The Office.
And the guy from Mad Men.
And the guy from Mad Men.
And the girl from SNL. And the other girl from SNL.
It's like Maya Rudolph, John Hamm, that guy from Parks and Rec, yeah. Oh,
and the guy from IT Crowd.
It's Apatow.
Oh, right. And that
guy. Just the stable of Apatow people.
Yeah. It's full of people you know and recognize from other things.
It's like New York couples having babies, and then the non-couple that hasn't had a baby, and then, yeah. It's good. It's funny, and it's emotionally involving.
It was
too.
A very interesting concept. Yeah, I think I might give it like 3, 3.5.
Yeah, I was on the border.
Yeah.
It's 4. Nature, Birds of the Gods, 4 stars. This is like a documentary on Netflix. It's just got crazy, awesome footage of really rare birds, of like doing crazy mating dances. You've seen
like
the
a
GIFs,
Planet Earth kind of a
or
thing.
You've seen the clips also in Planet Earth of like just these crazy ass birds of paradise that look like fucking aliens doing weird things. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Aziz Ansari, Dangerously Delicious. This is his other comedy special. It's also on Netflix streaming. Hilarious. 4 stars. Chronicle.
I see quote marks around that.
No, it was good. It was really funny.
No, like a back of the box quote. Like, yeah, hilarious. Exactly. Star.
Yeah, exactly. That's my quote. Chronicle. This is like, kids getting superpowers. Edited or filmed like Blair Witch, like handheld.
Found footage.
Totally found footage. Interesting. Documentary. I wanted it to be a little better. It just barely gets 4 stars.
Is that like a no-name cast or?
No-name cast, yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
It cool, kind of cool special effects, and it kind of everything had been done before except the combination of characteristics. It was a lot like that other found footage sci-fi thriller from a couple years earlier.
The J.J. Abrams one?
Yeah, what was
Godzilla-ish one?
Yeah, what was that called?
Flower.
It's right there.
Something
yeah,
flower.
Yeah, exactly. That one.
Yeah.
Bellflower or something.
It was exactly
like
that, except it was kids getting superpowers.
It's like a one-word name that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
I kind of had a problem
with
it.
We all know that movie.
Maybe I should just give it 3, because I kind of had a main
Super
problem
8?
With it.
Huh? No, not Super 8. No.
It's literally one word, and it's something like Bellflower.
Blair Witch, but it's like some monster attacking the city, but you never actually see it kind of a thing.
Yeah, whatever. All right.
I don't know.
Here's the 3 stars. The Haunting, 1963, supposedly a classic like haunted house, like scary black and white movie. It was interesting. It was more like watching a movie. Cloverfield. Yeah. It was like watching a movie for school. It was really interesting in that it might have been the first movie that did a lot of these things, and that it was kind of tense while basically they didn't show any monsters the whole time or anything like that. But it just wasn't super great compared to my standards now. Wanderlust, Jennifer Aniston and Paul Rudd, and I wanted it to be funnier. It was okay.
It was pretty good.
It was pretty good. Rango, good animation, and what's his name?
Johnny Depp.
Johnny Depp is like a lizard in the desert.
Cowboy lizard.
I wanted it to be better. It's just a dumb kids movie.
Johnny
with
Depp
a handful of adult jokes.
Is Tonto in the new Lone Ranger movie?
Yeah.
Is that weird or is that racist? I feel like it's weird.
Is it
it's
Tim
a
Burton?
Weird.
I don't know.
Because if it is, then it well, that's what happens.
No, it's the same people who are doing the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. Jerry Bruckheimer.
Oh. Okay. So, well, then there you go. That's why. They've already got Depp on the payroll. You know, they're just like, "Hey, Depp, come do my next thing."
It was all right. I heard it was better. It was good for kids, but not great for just me. Nantucket Film Festival comedy. Anyway, it's like Ben Stiller and Chris Rock and a couple other guys on stage talking about comedy, and it was interesting, but not super great. Making of South Park: 6 Days to Air. Also, like, interesting, you get to see how they, like, is a documentary about how they make South Park in only 6 days. It just follows them through, like, 1 week and one episode, mostly. Just talks about how they, how the show's origins, and then how they make a week with a really fast turnaround that, like, nobody else in the industry does. Kind of interesting, but not super funny and kind of not worth watching. That's it for movies.
Nice.
Games. Who's up? Who wants to go?
Games?
Mike, games.
All right. So, two games that I haven't played yet, but look interesting. The Bridge, that is out on Steam, $15. It's a stylized
1980s Billy Joel album.
Right.
Looking one.
A stylized black and white MC Escher inspired puzzler. Yeah, it looks moody. Like, it looks cool. It looks fun. I totally think that we should all play it, like, with Robin.
Let's play it.
Okay. So, Planescape Torment, beloved RPG from the heyday of CRPGs, there is now an official sequel.
What's a CRPG?
Kickstarter.
Computer.
It doesn't exist yet. There's a Kickstarter.
Right, sorry. There is a Kickstarter for it.
For
the official sequel to this game.
The spiritual successor, which is not an official sequel.
Well, there's also another game.
Because it's not even set in the same world.
Well, that's
world.
True. Okay, but... It's as close to a sequel as is going to happen.
Yes.
Called,
I think spiritual successor is an accurate way to describe
it. Okay. Called Torment, Tides of Numenera. Numenera is the new world that it exists in as opposed to Planescape, which is what the other one was in. So it's... I put money down on it. Although I'm already waiting for like a Shadowgate reboot, Wasteland 2, Shadowrun Returns, and Project Eternity, which are all these kind of like reboots of old RPG games. But it's significant because it got to $900,000 in a few hours and $2 million in a day, which is now, I think, the record for most amount of money made by
fastest.
A project. Fastest in a day, yeah. Like the most, the fastest to a million.
And they were only asking for like half a million?
No, I think they were asking for like 900K.
I think they were asking for 900,000. Okay. So they got to their goal in a few hours and then way surpassed it in 24
hours.
That's
pretty awesome. That's
so amazing. Apparently there's still a huge you know, demographic that wants this game. So that's cool. I'm looking forward to that.
I'm crossing my fingers that every IP or, you know, classic game that the cult classic that I'm fucking in love with that mm-hmm. dies and doesn't get a sequel like 10 years from now, mm-hmm. someone like puts a Kickstarter up for it. Yeah. And there's enough of us hardcore fans left to just make another one happen.
That's how you're finally going to get Last Guardian.
I know, man.
I just want some of these to come out, but still, most of them don't come out for like a year or more. So, although Shadowrun Returns, they actually put their first alpha gameplay video up. They put like a 20-minute video where two of the developers played through the game, and it looks pretty good for an alpha. It looks totally playable, and they did commentary, so it's actually happening. That money is going somewhere. And then I played a few iOS games that are worth mentioning. There was this one game that I played that was really fun back, I don't know, maybe came out a year ago, called Flow Free. Very simple puzzle game. Yep. So there's a new game that's fairly similar called Adrift that I saw posted on, like, you know, the game development Reddit subreddit, which is similar, except instead of being on a flat 2D surface, it's on a faux cube or faux 3D cube. And they also have a rainbow block, which lets you cross paths, which you could not do in Flow Free. And it's currently free right now. And the visual design is really nice. It looks really professional. I think it was probably only done by like two or three guys, but it looks really good. So that's worth picking up.
Cool.
There is this musician. I think his name is Armon Bohn, B-O-H-N. And I liked some of the music that he put out. Well, he put out a game recently called Arranger, which is, I don't really know how to describe it. It's probably a game I'm not sure I would play if I didn't like the music and the general personality of it, because it really feels like just a bunch of mini games. It's almost like a Wii game. A Wii garbage, like, you know, game.
WarioWare style? Like micro games?
Yeah, sort of. Like, basically, you have this little dude, and the idea is you want to collect instruments. You have, like, a running tally of instruments that you're picking, and you'll do all these random little mini games that are really simplistic, but sometimes you'll run into a person who wants you to make them a song. You want to arrange a song. So you choose three of your instruments, and they want a certain type of song. Like, I want something ambient. I want something upbeat. I want something funky. Huh. And you pick three instruments out of your cachet, and depending on which you choose, if it's a good match for that song, then the number of hits that you have to get, you're like basically shooting this like floating brain that moves up and down, like you're shooting music into the mind of the person asking for it. And each of the instruments have a different weapon attack pattern, and some of them are easier to do and need fewer hits if you choose the right one for the arrangement. So that's a weird little interesting minigame they do.
So the instruments change up every time. So like, say you got a guitar or something hypothetically, and it had a certain attack pattern. If it was for a genre like rock, it would be a different pattern.
No, all the instruments have the same attack pattern, but the obstacles they throw at you and how many hits of each instrument you need are based on you choosing the right ones for that particular arrangement. So I don't know. And it's really cute. It's got really low res, like, you know, like almost Atari-looking graphics, but it's got interesting music because a musician made it, and I don't know. It's strangely addicting.
That sounds
like
crazy.
Addictive.
It's a very, very strange game just in its design in general. It's got lots of interesting characters you meet that, like, one world has characters that are literally letters of the alphabet, and when you talk to them, their speech has multiples of their letter in their speech. So if they say like Mike and they're a letter M, they'll be like Mike, or if they're an L, they'll be like Lance or something like that. You know, just really weird, quirky world and characters.
This is on iOS?
This is on iOS, yeah. And then one more that just came out like, I don't know, last week is called Relic Run, which is sort of like an infinite runner, except single screen. and you basically just have a little dude at the bottom, and you're supposed to get him to the top, and he either goes up and down ladders, or he leaps over, you know, pits, and then there are enemies that will do very simple things like jump around or roll back and forth, and you have to navigate around them to get to the top. And there's 8 screens per world, and the faster you do it, the better, you know, reward you get: gold, silver, bronze. The difference is, instead of you tapping to have him jump, you hold on the screen to have him stop moving. So you basically have to time everything you do the most efficiently to get through this obstacle course by, like, okay, stop, wait, all right, now go, all right, now stop, okay, now go, okay, stop, wait, you know, that kind of gameplay. So it's very simple, one touch, you know, you can do it while, you know, doing something else with the other hand.
iOS.
Huh?
iOS.
iOS, yes. So, yeah, it's also cute, low-res graphics, very simple concept, but done amazingly well, which I think iOS, or at least phones, like, excel at, you know? I really like games that just have a super simple concept done well. It doesn't need to be crazy 3D graphics, movie soundtrack. I just want it to be an interesting mechanic. So.
Cool.
That's what I played.
Cool. Have you played anything recently, Dave? Or
that
only
that wasn't doing? Of your own hand?
Well, actually, as many of us have had in the past an SNES, I've missed out on Super Metroid, so recently jumped into that.
Man.
Yeah, yeah. So I jumped back into that recently, and I'm blown away. Even to this day, that is like one of the best games I've played.
It's a great game. I could replay that.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, how are you playing it? Are you playing it on an actual Super Nintendo?
No comment.
You're playing
it
in
a
different
Super
way.
Nintendo controller.
Yeah, what
I
kind
have
of controller?
A controller. I have a controller.
Xbox controller.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
That's good enough, I think.
Yeah. Gamepad.
Maybe. I don't know. The D-pad's pretty terrible on that thing.
Well, so is the for certain moves, like if you guys recall the wall jump technique, oh, that is brutal to try and do on an actual joystick.
On the analog, you mean?
Yeah.
I would not do that.
If you got a PS3 controller, Bluetooth has a better D-pad on it.
I might try that.
You could Bluetooth sync. It's pretty easy. Google for it.
Yeah. So I'm almost done with that, I think. I seem to be pretty far. I won't lie. I've had to do a couple of YouTube, you know, kind of looks to see where to go next.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I'm having a great time with that one.
Classic.
Total classic. Yeah.
The only thing else I'd like to mention on that is the Silent Age. If you guys are fans of...
I just downloaded that, but I haven't played it yet.
It's pretty good. I mean... The genre is rare on iOS, and we need more types of games that are old-school adventure games.
I don't know anything about this. Is this like Myst?
No, it's like Monkey Island. No.
Yeah.
Monkey Island. Okay.
Monkey Island, you know, heavy in dialogue and interactivity, and it's puzzles in that way. But this one has a twist. It's I don't think it really gives too much away to say that there's a time travel element to it, which kind of really spices things up. And the first episode is free. They're trying to do a Kickstarter, trying to get more money for the subsequent...
So it's brand new. It's not an old port.
No.
It
just came out.
Just came out. It's an original, and it's got an interesting story.
How much for episode one?
It's free.
Free.
Currently, I have it.
Get it. No excuse.
I already have it.
Nice.
And that's it for me.
Cool. I got to borrow your shit and play it. Go ahead, Charles.
Tomb Raider.
Play? Tomb Raider.
Tomb Raider, yo. Okay.
Tress FX.
Tomb Raider.
That's all
Tomb
I care about.
He doesn't have any Tress FX on his Xbox.
Oh, lame sauce.
Now, here's what I will say. That game is so fucking gorgeous, it feels like playing a next-gen console. Like, if... I cannot imagine that there is a spare CPU cycle or a spare block
of memory. Like, many CPU cycles that would...
It's amazing they could do that shit with 500 megs of RAM.
It's unbelievable how good the game looks. I mean, they are just cranking every last possible graphics. I mean, on the Xbox.
They tightened the graphics on level 3, didn't they?
I mean, tightened the shit out of them. They're amazing. I mean, it's really just the best video game I've ever seen my Xbox produce. It looks
so you played
awesome.
You played on Xbox, but Josh showed you on PC. Does it look even better?
The weird experience that I've had is somehow I feel like it looks better on... I know objectively it looks better on PC, right? Because the frame rate is higher and it's got the hair effects and that kind
and
of stuff.
And it's in 1080p native instead of probably 720p.
Yeah, but I think because it's in 720p, it's not attempting to render higher, and maybe they do lock the frame rate or something like that. And I sit farther away from my TV, so everything kind of smears out and I can't perceive as well. You know, and at your house, you sit much closer to your screen, right? I don't know. It just looks fucking great. It looks awesome on PC as well. It's just an amazing looking game. It's really, really great.
One of the things I mentioned and then I told you about and then we never followed up is that on PC, a lot of these games, when I push the settings to like make it look fucking sick, my frame rate sometimes drops a little below 30. Maybe it drops to 25 or something like that, right? But when it's like more like a corridor, the frame rate might be 60 or something, right? So when you get the fluctuation of the frame rate between 30 and 60, between like 1 second 30, 1 second 60, it really like is distracting and takes me out of it. Now, in a competitive setting, which we were doing the multiplayer online, trying it together, like you want as many frames as you can get at any given moment. And you probably want to turn the settings down just so that you don't have lag when you're like trying to headshot someone before they headshot you, right? So I left it fully, you know, many frames a second as I could get. But I found an app. It's like the newest version of RevaTuner, which is by MSI Afterburner or some shit. And I can lock my frame rate with it, even though I don't have an MSI card, at 30 frames a second. And when I lock it at 30, like, if it ever dips to 27 or 26 or whatever, it's barely noticeable, and it just looks solid. It doesn't like throw me out of whack and go, "Oh my god, it's 60. Oh my god, it's 30." Mm-hmm. As long it's like jumping between The Hobbit in 48 frames a second and 24 frames. Like just if you swapped every scene, it would right. be weird, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know why no one else does this on the internet. It does not seem to be a popular thing, and only a handful of games have a setting that says lock at 30 frames per second or 60 or whatever.
So I think PC gamers tend to want to have
60. Larger numbers.
Yeah, they want more numbers. Maximum whenever possible. Yeah.
But if you ever drop below it, it's distracting. So I'd rather just lock it at 30 than have it fluctuate up to 60.
Well, a lot of people have the ego saying, my rig's badass. My rig can handle 60 the entire time.
Yeah, but also,
you're just justifying not having a better computer.
I have friends like that always need to play at 60, but what they do is they like turn shadows off and stuff that makes the game look way better. They're like, yeah, but with shadows off, like I can see dudes at a better distance without seeing the shade.
Yeah, I'm not
them.
Saying you're wrong. I'm actually agreeing with you in this day and age when graphics are so nice and so.
Oh man, it looks awesome when you turn the shadows way up and then you see like shadows of individual hairs. It's amazing. The stress effects thing is crazy. You see all these individually rendered hairs instead of one big block of polygon section of hair.
Really?
It's like hundreds of hairs.
Yeah, it's pretty. Very different to what you're used to seeing.
Holy crap. But Josh, you have to say what the downside of TressFX and how it's throwing you out of the game.
I compared it to the 48 frames of Hobbit. Like the downside is that it's distracting. It's so unusual and it looks so rad that you're just staring at it the whole time going, oh my god, look at her hair.
It's literally the Uncanny Valley.
It is totally Uncanny
Valley. It's so much more realistic that it's bizarre and weird because it does. In the situations where it doesn't look quite right, it's very obvious that it doesn't look
right. Yeah, I'm not even convinced at this point yet that it is any more realistic. Mm-hmm. It just looks cooler at this point.
It just looks cooler.
You know what I mean? Like, because I'm so used to just seeing a block of hair and ignoring it and thinking that looks normal.
Yeah.
You know
it's so funny that there's middleware for hair.
Yeah.
That is like SpeedTree.
But like, there's a company that just is staring at hair.
Yeah, they make TressFX and they sell it to other companies who are making video games.
Pretty sweet.
SpeedTree is another one. Like if you want to make a million trees for your forest, you go buy SpeedTree. That's a real thing. There's a company that makes middleware called SpeedTree that will build out your trees in your Skyrim or whatever.
Totally.
Yeah.
So anyway, besides how it looks, the game is pretty good.
Yeah, so besides the technical aspects, the game is a traversal oriented, occasional combat, you know, lots of exploration, Tomb Raider game. I have not played a ton of the other Tomb Raider games, particularly I haven't played any of the more recent ones. I like watched a college roommate play one of the early PS1 games, like Tomb Raider 2 or something. So it's Lara Croft's origin story. You know, they're trying to kind of humanize this character, you know, kind of one of the famously debated, speaking of women in video games, debated video game characters, right? Obviously kind of an objectified sex symbol, but also a powerful female figure. It's her origin story. It's like how she becomes the, you know, sort of almost superhuman, you know, Indiana Jones.
Raider of Tombs.
Yeah, figure that she is, you know, later on. So they're trying to strike a more realistic tone.
It's good. It's really good. The only criticism I have is that it falls into the trap that Uncharted does as well, where the cutscenes and the kind of the story arc is someone who does not have a bunch of experience out in the world. It's somebody who's gradually coming upon kind of hidden strength and inner ability. And yet, the combat is murder a bunch of dudes in the face with all these guns, mm-hmm. right? So this was, they made something of this in, there's the Penny Arcade comic about Uncharted, where they showed, kind of the interior life of one of the guards who's, writing a note back home to his kids, and then Nathan Drake just comes up and, stabs him and throws him off a cliff.
Did you see this one? They just made a Tomb Raider one.
No, I haven't seen it.
I think it was today.
Okay.
Frame one is guy with two machetes with a huge grin on his face going, "Dude, they made me the two machete guy. What'd they make you?" And you see kind of a face that's a little disappointed. And then frame two is the disappointed guy looking at the machete guy, and he's got a big, bright red backpack. Otherwise, he's just a regular dude. He's like, they made me Molotov cocktail guy. That means I have a backpack full of old liquor bottles full of gasoline.
Yep. I mean, so just there's the it's not too much of a spoiler to it's definitely not a spoiler to say that you kill enemies in this game.
And the two machete guy in the third frame, backs the fuck away from that guy as he says that.
Slowly backpedaling.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sorry.
The first time that Lara Croft has to kill someone, it's, an intense scene, an intense cutscene involving some, quick time events. And when she does finally kill this person who's assaulting her, she vomits. She's scared, frightened, worried about what she's done, kind of consumed, cries about it. It's an intense and a powerful scene, and I'm glad they treated it the way they did. They gave some weight and some seriousness to this thing that she's just had to do.
It's pretty fucking rad.
Yeah, it's very good. And then
she kills 20 guys.
Immediately, you have a firefight with six other dudes, and you just kill them all.
That didn't make any sense at all.
And that is just sort of emblematic of this problem in video games. I don't know. I don't have a great solution for how you treat this better, maybe just pace it out better.
I mean, that just sounds like, incredibly horrible pacing. I mean, how does that not look like the worst juxtaposition to the game developers?
It's not horrible pacing. It's typical pacing is what it is.
Which is not good.
They think that your average buyer needs to get into the combat of the game as soon as possible. And so that opening tutorial / cutscene written / quick time event ridden part, that's the part that I, my other buddy, probably wouldn't have any patience for. And he'd be like, "God damn it. I keep having to mash right and left trigger, mm-hmm. To climb up this hill during this intense,
scripted movie scene.
Movie scene. And he wants to just get to the part where you shoot guys and climb on things.
Which is understandable. I mean, just taking The Walking Dead, for example. What if that was advertised as an action game, but still contained the exact same game that, you're all come to play? Someone would be extremely frustrated that they're, sitting there for an hour doing all this other
dialoguing.
Stuff. Dialoguing with everybody, and, a zombie finally comes out, and then it's, you guys have played the combat.
Yeah, Q.
E.
Yeah, exactly.
And Walking Dead is this exception that kind of has proven that there can be a large audience for games that are primarily dialogue with minimal actual shooting and traditional combat or game interaction. You know what I mean? And Tomb Raider, there's obviously a big team or multiple teams of people making it with multiple priorities, and they have all the influence of all the previous Tomb Raiders and the canon or whatever, but they're also kind of rebooting the canon, doing a prequel, but then they know that Uncharted beat them at their own game on their debut.
Yeah,
they'd been making Tomb Raiders for more than 10 years, fucking dozen Tomb Raiders, and the first Uncharted does like completely copies Tomb Raider and does a couple things slightly different and then makes like way more money. And it just gets stellar reviews. And they're like, why can't we get stellar reviews? So they looked at all the Uncharteds and they tried to make a game a lot more like those with a lot of this, like, way better, tighter shooting on a mechanical, like, gaminess rating, right? It is way better shooting than all the other Tomb Raiders. And then they give it a better story. They give it way better mocap and human. They humanize the characters a lot more. It's like one of the first games that Laura feels like a human,
a real character,
instead of this caricature, like super powerful, big breasted, you know, goddess like super, you know, like superhuman. Like
she's someone you might identify with a little bit.
Angelina Jolie is perfect casting for
she is.
Old, I mean, old Lara Croft.
Yeah. Now they need a new one because this is totally like a human teenage girl stuck in like crazy situation, except for her amazing like bow skills. You know,
yeah. That's the other thing is like in order to give her a fun progression from a gameplay standpoint, they have to give you these additional skills as you it, like. So you level up and you gain a new combat skill, which is, you know, will be this like fucking crazy, awesome looking, you know, stun and then dodge counter and then, you know, insta kill combo, like melee combo. You're like, you've been on this island for like, you know, 72 hours at this point. And like, I know I leveled you up, but all of a sudden you're fucking like Krav Maga, like, you know, death machine. How did that happen?
And maybe we should overlook this because it's the common problem of all prequels where, you know, the prequel Halo, it's like, why do you have cooler abilities 30 years earlier?
Right.
You know, the prequel Star Trek, so like, you know, why is all your tech like
Star Wars?
Episodes
Star
1 through 3.
Star Wars, all of them.
What the hell? Yeah.
Why Darth Vader's religion was an ancient religion that's totally died out 25 years after the, you know.
So we can give him a break and say it's still a good game, but it's just super, like, it doesn't make, the story does not make sense with
There's always room for improvement.
I think their ambitions are so high, and they did enough to pay off a lot of it, that part, those things stick out, you know. The thing that I've heard about Uncharted, and I haven't played Uncharted, so I don't know this to be true, is that Uncharted, Nathan Drake kind of always has the has like a wink and a nod and like a smile at the camera every time, and it's got that kind of pulp feeling about this where this is trying to be that much more realistic and
it's a little
legitimate.
Bit true, yeah,
and so it's yet harder
this is definitely a more serious game than Uncharted. Uncharted it's like gently punching dudes and kind of like
the jokey
winking
kind of...
and nodding, and this one is like gruesome, horrible death that's just like shocking when you make a mistake, you know.
Yes. Holy shit.
I did
actually
hear that they like
there are a ton of them that really set your teeth on it.
It's a strange game to choose to make like a gore porn out of.
Yeah, I'm curious, like, do you think it would have affected you as much if you were playing a dude?
Yes.
Yeah, no,
absolutely.
Easily.
So it's not a gender, like, because
even when the same thing happens to an enemy, it's like, geez.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they kind of went a little over the top to like make a point, you think? To seem more mature, more gritty? Or they didn't need to go that far? Like, it was a little much?
It was clearly a choice that they made make a very...
Maybe they looked at Walking Dead and they didn't learn that they could have made it without combat. They learned that maybe we should make a really gory game and it'll be really popular. I don't know. Yeah. It'll be more emotionally intense if it's really gory.
It is quite intense.
And that's kind of true.
Yeah.
You know, would Walking Dead be the same if it weren't about zombies and it didn't have all these life-threatening situations where you're choosing between life and death for your friends or yourself?
Yeah, I think that's easy to answer because I tried playing the Back to the Future game, which
Back to the Future was terrible.
Because I had no emotional involvement in it.
Yeah.
It just, the stakes were not high.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's Doc. It's Marty.
I know.
Yeah, it's cute.
It's cute, but it's not emotionally like, you know, at least in the first hour or two I played.
Just wait for the reboot. Back to the Future.
Electric Boogaloo.
Gore porn. Anyway, I'm like halfway through this game. All things considered, I think it's quite good. I think it deserves the high review scores that it's getting.
Yeah, all things considered, I think it's better than the Uncharted's.
Yeah.
So I wish it. I know this is nitpicking, but I wish it got like 0.4 higher review average in order to get closer to Uncharted.
I think Polygon gave it 9.5, didn't they?
Yeah, one or two places, right. Yeah. But I mean, the Metacritic is still lower than the Uncharted, okay. I think. Yeah.
What is the Metacritic, actually?
We can check.
Is it your favorite Tomb Raider now of all of the ones? Because you've played pretty much all of them, right?
I mean, there is in a way, it's different and maybe not as good as some of the things I liked about the earlier Tomb Raiders. I can't judge yet. I'm only a couple hours in.
Okay.
The traversal mechanics are really fun. They actually give you a very cool traversal mechanic in the... they give you the... is this a minor spoiler? I guess it's a spoiler. There are some really fun ways that they give you to get around the environment that I haven't seen done before. That are quite enjoyable. And there's a pretty good, Josh and I played it for a few hours, pretty good multiplayer component as well.
The multiplayer has a lot of potential. Yeah. You know, it seems really polished and well done. And like the way the combat works, the way the perks work, and the way the leveling up and the unlocking of new abilities and weapons and stuff works. But the matchmaking is not good yet on PC, at least. Mm-hmm. It might have had to do with like an update. An update apparently came out like on Sunday, so maybe the people who hadn't updated yet, we weren't able to matchmake with. Also, NVIDIA drivers are kind of broken with the hair thing, so maybe people with NVIDIA cards are waiting to play it. Also, maybe everybody's just playing single player. Anyway, a month from now, the multiplayer might have enough people in
it. Yeah.
What did you guys think of the music and sound design?
Good. Music is good. It's an orchestral score.
Because remember, I talked about it many, many weeks ago about like the guy who did the music. He like built an instrument just to make the music, or at least make part of it. So I was really curious if that stood out at all.
So far, it seems cool and it puts you in the mood.
Yeah.
I'll try to pay attention even more.
I didn't hear like, oh, that's a weird original instrument. A sound I've never heard before. It just sounds like a good orchestral kind of, you know, John Williams-y. Not even as bombastic as John Williams, but just like a nice orchestral movie soundtrack type music.
All right, cool. here's your Metacritic answer. Uncharted 1, 2, 3, 88, 96, 92, Tomb Raider 86. So it's almost the first Uncharted.
Wow, I'm actually surprised it's that low. I thought it'd at least be in the 90s.
That's what I was saying. Like, it's nitpicking, but I wish it were 90 average instead of an 86 average. That's kind of a dumb
thing
to say.
But, you know, whatever. It's a good game.
It's a good game.
Who cares what its Metacritic rating is?
Real good.
So
that's all I played.
Should we bring up the tropes versus women thing?
Sure.
Since this is obviously a very woman-centric episode.
I also got Crokinole, and Crokinole is rad.
Yeah, Josh
played a lot of that, and we should play more of that.
Sweet.
This is the Wooden Board Game Kickstarter. It was good. Mayday Games, fourth gen, good quality, crazy cheap price. Highly recommend it. Okay, moving on.
Makes a huge difference with Crokinole to have a waxed board and waxed pieces.
Yeah, fresh board, freshly waxed.
Yes.
So is John's board kind of not good now?
He's grungy.
He just needs to wax it.
Okay.
Which is probably a decent amount of work. Josh, I mean...
Well, it's easy when it's new. It might be more work when it's dirty.
You probably have to like clean it and then wax it or something.
Probably.
Yeah. It makes a big, big difference. Really just the force that you have to use is so much lower that, you feel like you can be more accurate. It's a lot of fun.
Totally.
Game is really fun.
All right, Sarkeesian article. This is, what's her full name?
Anita Sarkeesian.
Anita Sarkeesian.
Yes.
She put a Kickstarter up like a year ago or something. To produce a video series about women in gaming, tropes and issues, you know, discussing characters, female characters portrayed in gaming, and maybe even getting more deeper into women in development behind games and stuff like that. I'm not sure all the details.
And she had already done several videos about things of this nature, including tropes about women in media, just not in video games specifically. Also, she only asked for $6,000, which is super low Kickstarter
compared
history,
to a lot of them, yeah,
and got like $150,000. So that's like,
right.
I don't know what percentage that is, but it's
so that
insane.
Kind of spawned a bunch of articles or coverage saying, "Oh, look at this girl making this video series and asking for $6,000, getting $150 just to produce a video series." Quote just. Because a lot of gamers then went online and said, oh, this isn't an actual gaming Kickstarter. This is just to make a video series about women. You know, fuck this. Like, she's terrible and said a bunch of sexist things about her. And
there was basically a hate campaign against her.
Serious hate campaign
against
her.
Like, ridiculous for, Yeah, and she did a TED, there's an offshoot of TED just for women, and she went and spoke and talked about this hate campaign, and it was like, I hadn't really read much up on it, but she put a couple, like, collages of some of the, like, screen caps of things that people had said about her, and it's just, man, the internet never fails to lower my faith in humanity. Like, fucking A, like, what is wrong with people?
Yeah.
Like, she wants to make some videos on the internet, and she got a lot of money. I don't know. It's like it.
So then she did some public speaking, and her primary topic during a couple of her public speaking announcements or speeches, what was about her personal treatment over the last month, right? Mm-hmm. And then because she talked about not her video series, but she talked about how she had been treated in the last month. Then it, like, escalated the hate campaign against her. Like, oh, now you're not even making the videos. Now you're talking about yourself and whining about people on the internet criticizing you. Mm-hmm. It was so brutal. Like, I literally thought she was going to, like, maybe get depressed, become a recluse, change jobs, not make the videos, etc.
Yeah.
She finally actually made the videos, and the first one's out last week. And it looks really good. Did you anybody watch it yet?
I watched the whole thing. It's good. It's good. Quality, yeah.
It's a good show.
I mean, I don't
it's
know.
It's like a documentary. Like, it could easily be on, like, a random cable channel.
Yeah.
About, you know.
It was like a TED Talk with visuals, like, where she sat down and videotaped herself for 25 minutes. Yeah. I mean, it seemed well-researched.
Yeah, the first one was on basically the princess in peril.
Damsels in distress, yes. Yes,
there you go.
Yeah.
I did a different alliteration.
You did, yes. Yeah.
So, yeah. Tropes is new to me. So, like, what kind of topics is she trying to get into? You just mentioned right now the princess in peril.
Yeah, that's the first one. Yeah, I mean, trope meaning, you know, basically a stereotype that people lean on in their design. Like, the damsel in distress, Mario always, you know, the Princess Peach is helpless and trapped and has no agency. She is basically reduced to, you know, a treasure or something like that Mario is trying to rescue. You know, she has, there's nothing to her. She's basically a stereotype.
And, another example that in this week's news was the father who hacked Donkey Kong so that instead of, like, Mario rescuing
Pauline
up on a platform next to Donkey Kong because he kidnaps the girl and then you have to rescue her, he replaced all the graphics so that Pauline is rescuing Mario from Donkey Kong.
Which was lovely.
I think that's pretty cute.
That was pretty awesome. That's a good dad.
So my favorite coverage of this whole debacle is this week's Jim Sterling article of the six months called The Call of Sarkeesian on Destructoid. And, oh man, I love it. Because he does this, like, apocalyptic end of the world.
Great. H.P. Lovecraft.
He writes it like Call of Cthulhu.
Yes. Lovecraftian. You know, like, it's the worst thing ever. That this monstrous girl has existed. No, I can't, but we'll link it.
Okay.
That this monstrous girl has existed in her creation, abominable creation, etc. Obviously, sarcastically making fun of all the douchebags that criticized her. Because finally her video is out and
the end of the world is nigh.
And it's all actually your video pretty games good.
Will disappear.
So fuck those people.
Yeah, he was basically saying her existence will erase all of your video games.
I'm really amazed that there was actual hate campaign for it. I mean,
you've been on the internet before, right?
We're all used to the comments section of any comments section of any website turning into some strange fiasco about Nazism, gays, and God knows what else.
Or gay Nazis.
Yeah, right. But entire hate campaigns just to smear somebody.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say whether there was an organized campaign, you know, like Anonymous or something, but there was so much of it, and it was continuous and relentless that it felt like it. And all of her YouTube videos, like, she basically turned off comments, like, even this one particular, which, of course, will just fuel more hate because there's nothing the internet hates more
than being censored,
than not being able to comment and call women on the internet gay Nazis. I mean, that's the lifeblood of a lot of the internet. But it's weird because I can totally see why she does it and at the same time see that she's dooming herself by doing it. Like, it's an unending cycle. Like, she can't win, you know. She either leaves it open and people fuel it with hate, or she closes it and now they're like, oh, you know, you don't want to let us, like, you know, what about the free power of speech and the internet? And I'm just like, ugh.
From what I can tell, she already won. She accomplished her goals.
Yeah.
And that's basically the bottom line. It doesn't matter who's trying to like throw mud on you. If you did what you said you were going to do, you delivered on it, and it came out well.
The best revenge is living well, basically.
Totally.
Exactly. So good for her, man.
Yeah.
I saw a bunch of my friends like subscribe to her YouTube channel, Feminist Frequency, which is like the website that she does all this on. And I don't know. That was really heartwarming because it's one thing to like support her or just think that, hey, this is not cool that they, you know, that a hate campaign was hatched against somebody, but to actually be interested and want to hear more from her, I don't know. It was just kind of cool to me.
Yeah, I think it's just a lot. I want to think that it's a lot of kids online who don't really know what they're saying.
Just pointless posturing kind of a thing?
Just like, this is something to spew some adolescence at.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I also want to think it's that. I don't want to believe that there is really a structured, you know, hate.
There isn't. I don't think that it's an organized campaign. I definitely don't believe that that's the case. But I do think that there are a lot of guys out there who... There's something called like the men's rights movement,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, has proponents and detractors and, you know, legitimate reasons for being and all those other sorts of things. It's more complex than, you know, we could cover here. But that it's sort of like some say anti-feminist, others say just pro-men, but... You know, that kind of has the ring of like, well, why can't I have a white pride parade if you're going to have a Puerto Rican Day parade? You know, I mean, there's just like just a million of those types of issues. Feminism is such a fraught issue anyway. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just one of those things that feels bizarre to many that it's even a question and yet is super important to many others.
And you know, it's weird, even though I don't enjoy the hate, quote unquote, hate campaign against her, like I can't help but also feel that, you know, she has a right to voice her opinion about what she wants just as much as they do, as hateful as I think that it is. You know, that's like the weird dichotomy of living in a free country where even people that have horrible ideas that are harmful to other people, well, I don't know. I guess you do a draw line. I mean, if they're actually harming some, but I mean, you know, is saying, I'm going to rape your dead body as a YouTube comment, is that something that should immediately put you in prison or something? I mean, just because it's hateful, even though you're not going to do anything about it and you're just saying bullshit on the internet? I mean, is saying bullshit on the internet always going to be okay? Should it be okay? I don't know. I feel like it should, even though I hate it.
But it's its own entertainment in a way.
But not for her, though.
Well,
for her, she was
not.
Seriously afraid for her life, I'm sure. I mean, we're all thinking, oh, it's just stupid bullshit on the internet. But I don't know, if the hate canon of the internet is aimed at you for days and weeks, I can't help but think that you might feel differently about, you know, free speech on the internet.
So the answer is to not escalate the scenario, right? Don't say you hate those people so much that they should die, mm-hmm. right? Just say you're disappointed in those people, you know what I mean? Like it's not... eye for an eye, it's like turn the other cheek, you know? Like, it's really, it's another example is I heard someone say that fifth graders that still need to add by counting on their fingers are ridiculous. And it's like, that's not ridiculous, it's disappointing, right? It's like an adult that can't read. Like, don't judge them and call them...
Don't make fun of me, Josh.
Like an ignorant asshole, right? Just mm-hmm. be disappointed and hope that they do eventually learn how to read and maybe help them learn how to read or something, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like, yes, those immature douchebags are being immature douchebags. You know, what can we do to help the problem and that's elevate the level of discourse, not call them douchebags, maybe.
Right. And once again, like I said, it's easy to feel that way when the hate cannon is not aimed at you. But if day in and day out, you are constantly being harassed, everybody has their breaking point where they can't just idly sit back and say, well, that's the internet for you. You know, and I think, she was at that point pretty early on, you know.
It's also the case that we you know, value negative comments more highly than we value positive comments.
Right.
Just that's sort of general human psychology. You can see, you know, 10 positive things written about you, and then you'll fixate on the one negative one. Mm-hmm. And when it's like 90% negative, you know, or even 50-50 negative, that feels fucking overwhelming, because it probably was. You know, I think there are, with all these, you know, controversial topics, there are also, defenders, and I think a large number of people rose to her defense. But even if it's like, hey, half the people out there, you know, in the group of people whom I'm trying to reach with this, who probably need to hear my message most, you know, half of those people think I'm terrible, etc. You know, it's tough to deal with.
Yeah. Did you just hit that guitar?
I did hit that guitar.
Yes.
Yeah.
On that note, guitar punching, ending credits.
Nice.
This has been The Escort Mission. Thank you for joining us. Hit us up on our site and click on our Amazon link, etc. Thanks.
Thanks. Be courteous.
Thanks for being here, Dave.
Thank you for having me. And contact your local congressman. I'm sure they'll get to your situations shortly.
Yeah. Do a petition online.
Yes.
I'll bet.
The White House petition.
Those
are really interesting to read, because like the top 10 are basically all anti-Westboro. Like
are they really?
They really are. Like the one that has the most right now, 300,000, is basically like to revoke their, you know, lack of tax. Like they don't have to pay taxes, and they want that to be revoked. And another one is just like there's at least three or four of them just on that specific topic. People on the internet really hate the Westboro Baptist Church, which is not, you know, of course. I mean, there's obvious real reasons for that, but it's just interesting that that's the concentration right now.
Sorry to extend this just a little bit more. I actually saw like a couple of Westboro Baptist Church representatives go on get interviewed by like Stephen Colbert, I think.
Really?
I think
on a show.
You know what I saw was they went on Russell Brand's FX talk show.
That's what it was. Yeah. It was Russell Brand. It wasn't Colbert.
Yep.
Huh. And it was really good. An enlightening discussion.
Quite good.
That made me have a little bit more sympathy for them. Like, really? I don't think they're just fucking assholes anymore.
Is it just a few bad apples ruin the bunch kind of a thing?
No, I think they're just misguided.
Oh,
They're actually more well-intentioned than I would have thought.
Hmm.
It, you know, like, if the only thing you knew about Anita Sarkeesian was that all these people hate her and think she's ripping off donors on Kickstarter, you might be tempted to believe them if you didn't know all the details.
Right.
Well, all we see is they're really atrocious signs that they hold up at rallies. I've never heard one of them speak until I saw them interviewed by Russell Brand. And it was like, oh, geez, that guy's human. That guy actually thinks he's doing the right thing. That's really interesting.
That is a problem when you have a set of beliefs that you feel are infallible.
That are so strong that you won't even converse about.
Not even beliefs that are strong. Like, it's like, I don't even believe this. It's just the truth. Like, this is inerrant. The inerrant, infallible word of God written down by men who are divinely inspired, literally true. Like, okay, well, we're all fucked now. Thanks for 2 centuries of, or 2 millennia of war, religion. Awesome. So glad we have you.
Hey, thanks for guessing, Dave.
We primarily religion. Talk about games on most podcasts, but, you know, you never know.
All right, take it easy. Have a good week.
Late.
See ya.